Hello, this is Justin Harper and you're listening to the Crypto Radio. We're aimed at beginners and novices and the crypto curious. Now, a lot of people invest in equities, either individual stocks like Apple or Microsoft, or in a fund, which some call mutual funds or unit trusts. These are often recommended by financial advisors. But a recent report highlighted that some financial advisors are reluctant to recommend crypto to their clients. This could be for a number of reasons. We're here to find out more from Jim Kreider, who is CEO of Intentional Living FP and is a certified financial planner. And Jim is based in the US. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
What has your experience been in talking to people about Bitcoin from friends, family, and clients? Has it been tough? Trying to, you know, get them to understand digital assets?
I guess the easiest are clients. I have people, my clients come to me initially to get my advice for their money, from taxes and estate planning to investments, retirement, all these things. So they come to me open, as long as they don't approach it too much, beating them over the head from a, like, Bitcoin perspective. So most of our clients initially came to me looking for a normal financial advisor. You know, they're looking for someone to help them with stock compensation planning at work, and, you know, hey, we're going to buy another rental property, things like that. Like, all right, how a normal person you would ask to help with money things, or most normal people would ask for. So I purposely don't lead with crypto or Bitcoin by any means. I don't display that on my website anywhere. It's not this forefront of marketing material at all. Those things I do not bring up until we've talked multiple times. They've already become a client, and I have displayed through other technical areas, again, like tax or retirement or budgeting, things like that. I've displayed that I am indeed not an idiot. And once I've developed that level of trust, then we'll bring in the Bitcoin side of things. That's pretty important, but they're the easiest. I have the privilege of having a captive audience. I guess from there, my family's interesting. I manage my parents' money as well, and they fully trust where I lead, on that side of things. So they're pretty simple. Other family, not so much. You know, I've never, those are conversations we don't get into too much. You know, we just had Thanksgiving here last week, and my brother and sister-in-law were in town, and we didn't really talk about Bitcoin at all, and we never really have in much depth by any means, just because holidays and everything are crazy. I have four kids, and they have four kids, so most of our time is spent chasing them. Another weird one is friends. You know, that's where the difference of, like, people you knew when you were younger versus people you meet when you're already developed in, like, a professional field. It's really interesting across that chasm of helping them understand that present me is still past me, but not what they have in their head. You know, like, especially like friends of life, like lifelong or parents of lifelong friends. You know, those people, you know, my best friend, his name's Bob. I used to spend the night at Bob's house all the time from when we were like 12, and we still hang out together regularly now. And his parents won't listen to me about Bitcoin at all. We've never had a good conversation because they won't let me broach the topic, really. And it's because I know in their heads, they're still picturing me as like a 12-year-old kid, you know, running around their house, you know, being all smelly and stuff, versus me as someone they could actually, who's competent in something at all.
Yeah, I can see that's a tough one. I mean, they knew you as a kid, and now they have to understand that you're a professional. When it comes to clients, what's the sort of trend you're seeing? More clients are now coming to you and saying, look, I think I really need to get into the crypto space. You know, I see Bitcoin's rising in price. Or they're curious, or they actually definitely want to start investing in digital assets.
So I have sort of two sides of clients. Most of our clients are normal people looking for a normal financial advisor. Bitcoin, crypto assets has not crossed their mind whatsoever when they are doing this. They are looking for someone to help them with investing their assets for retirement and this normal people stuff. They had zero thought of finding me or someone like me at all. So that's the norm. And of them, a very small percent were even thinking like, oh, is this something you talk about? But that's the, I don't know, maybe 1% of those people even had in their mind that that's a conversation they wanted to have. Most of them were just looking for a normal, you know, money manager. I do have another set of clients who are very heavy Bitcoin. They came to me because they're looking for someone who can take in their comprehensive financial picture and not stiff arm their crypto side of things. And that's where most money managers, wealth managers, financial planners out there either at best disregard it. Most of the time, they're pretty hostile to it. You know, they'll tell you, hey, don't sell it, or don't, you shouldn't buy any, or if you do buy some, it should maybe be 1% of your portfolio. And really, they're going to tell you that because they're just trying to get you to be quiet, to stop asking about it. And they think if you own 1% of your total portfolio in it, then that'll be enough to suffice and you'll stop bothering them. So that's, yeah, but overall, trend-wise, no, it's not asked about too often whatsoever. I think it will become more, but it's definitely more popular. I'm asked about it more than I was 4 years ago. Now I would say, yeah, it's 1, maybe 2% of conversations that I have that are proactively asked to me. 4 years ago, it was probably, it was a fraction of a percent.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think I read a blog in which you said, in your opinion, if a financial advisor isn't allocating clients to Bitcoin and they don't have a sound and educated reason as to why not, they're jeopardizing their fiduciary duty. So, you know, is that still where you stand now, that they really should be having that conversation with their clients now?
I do. And I'm not, I the caveat in there is, if you're not, you better have a good and informed, educated reason as to why not. And so the excuse of, oh, it's Beanie Babies or Tulip, is not an informed excuse as to why they shouldn't. A good reason should be, you know, the sequence of return risks if you're planning on using that money soon, or just like portfolio sizing, or, you know, different types of risks actually make sense. Not something that displays you know zero about this asset, and that is why you're not putting them in it. I think that is a clear breach of your fiduciary duty. When this was a basically nascent technology that first came out, yeah, I couldn't blame you. But now that it's so in your face, I think that's on you, that if you're ignoring this. I have personally tried to strike conversations with financial advisors over the last 5 years on this, and almost all of them, most financial advisors think I'm an absolute idiot. And I have been sort of black sheep in the industry amongst most of my peers because of this stuff. But I will continue to, you know, I try to be gracious and kind and patient with my words, for sure. But I still try to be persistent in helping them see their gaps. Because what frustrates me with the financial advisors who are ignoring this, it's not just hurting them. It's hurting the 50 to 500 clients they're serving. And that frustrates me big time.
Yeah, absolutely. How would you describe yourself? Bitcoin evangelist? What would you sort of say you are, if you could sum it up?
Yeah, I guess in summary, I mean, I've sort of have turned into a professional orange piller. Now, I'm a financial planner, and I view Bitcoin, in reality, I don't view Bitcoin as any special part of financial planning. And I genuinely believe that one day Bitcoin will be super boring to talk about. You know, we'll talk about Bitcoin in the same sense that normal people talk about the functions of the internet. We'll just use it. And yeah, we'll talk about different applications and stuff, but we're not going to sit here and, like, you know, speculate about where the internet's going, or, you know, some people will, but most normal people won't talk about the internet, or like internet shirts, you know, or, you know, it's not going to be a trendy thing to talk about. It's just something you use day to day. And that's where Bitcoin one day will be, if it does what we think it will do. So, but until then, at that point, Bitcoin is nothing special in financial plan. Bitcoin's money. That's it. Pretty simple. But until then, while I don't deem it as something special when it comes to planning, it sort of is, because it just sticks out like a sore thumb compared to most people. And it is this hyper important asset that's just underutilized right now. So in one sense, So generally, yes, financial planner, also sort of full-time professional orange pillar. But one day that it's not this odd part of my job. It's just part of talking about money.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously we've hit this historic milestone, 100,000 USD for a Bitcoin. Do you think that will convert many, firstly, non-believers on the investing side and also some of the financial advisors that they may start taking it seriously now it's hit this sort of symbolic level?
How I see this coming about from a financial advisor side of things, so at least here in the US, we have a few types of financial advisors, the way you can be structured. So there's like wirehouse, so like Morgan Stanley and Merrill Lynch and places like that, that usually are more like gathering assets and try to like sell portfolio management, things like that. I think those institutions will probably be the first to adopt because they are more focused on gathering in assets and selling a bundle of goods in a sense. And I think that those people will start being trained at BlackRock and at Goldman, things like this. They'll start training for a day or two on, hey, what is this? How do we position it properly in a portfolio? How do we sell it? I don't think for a while most of the advisors will actually understand it to the depth they should, but at least enough to sell it as a product. And that's, you know, it's sort of a win, sort of not. Then you have other people who are just more like insurance type companies or like sort of not very great financial advisors. Some of them will take a while just because they're, you know, stodgy in their old ways. And some of them will be pretty quick because they can, you know, maybe they manage a small practice and they can have some flexibility. I think the people who will probably be last are the firms like mine. So my firm structure is what's called a registered investment advisor or an RIA. So as an RIA, like most, generally speaking, RIAs are like good, in-depth, comprehensive financial planning. And you would think that if that's the goal, like, you know, most RIAs are structured where the financial advice has to be under fiduciary duty. You would think that we would be the first to adopt this. But most people, when they go through the like certified financial planner curriculum or CFA, things like that, they're just so inundated with the market is efficient, you know, Boglehead type of looking at things that anything that would disrupt their delicate point of view of maybe there are market inefficiencies or maybe there's ways to achieve alpha or maybe there's something wrong about the efficient frontier hypothesis or anything like that, you know, that's, you can't say those things. And those are the people that are going to be, I think, really hard to shake up. You know, they've buried their head in the sands. They think that just indexing all day is the way to go. And not that that's the worst thing ever, but like you have to consider that maybe our money's broken. So I think those people will take a while. So that's the financial planner. It will pick up, but I think it's going to pick up first from the sales-based type people. And then it'll slowly take a while. Like I would venture to say that most people, I'm part of financial planning groups with people like me that just don't understand Bitcoin. And I'd venture to say that half of them, at least today, will not know that Bitcoin hit 100,000 last night. And then the vast majority of them that do see that will say that, ah, man, that tulip bubble is persisting even more. It's even more speculative hype and even more dangerous than it was, you know, a year ago at 40,000 or whatever it was a year ago. Not understanding the game theory that's actually playing out right in front of them.
Yeah. But isn't that part of the problem that they're worried about this volatility? Because obviously they've got short track records. They tend to be volatile. Obviously, we might have seen a bit more stability now, but that hasn't been the case before. So there is still a big risk, isn't there, in investing there? I just wonder, for some of them, they might say, look, it's still too soon and I don't want to put my clients in that for that level of exposure. What would you say to that as a reason?
Yeah, I guess a couple things. One, you mentioned to that level, like at that level of exposure, well, you have to consider just proper portfolio sizing. Like portfolio sizing is a fantastic way just to manage risk. Super simple. Two, I think a lot of people have a incorrect definition of risk, and they have commingled risk and volatility to mean the same thing. And risk and volatility are not synonymous. Risk and volatility become more and more correlated as time horizons get compressed. So obviously, if you're in a highly volatile asset and you need that money in 1 hour, that's super risky. But if it's moving up down a ton and the overall trend line is upward and you need that money in 20 years, in my opinion, that's probably a lot safer than something that stays absolutely flat in nominal terms and goes down in real terms. I'm talking about the dollar here. $1 is, you know, it is flatlined. It is the basis right now for nominal returns. But in real returns, the dollar goes down by what, 2 to 10% per year, 3% roughly if we're looking at CPI. If you're a real person who spends money on real life, it's certainly more than 2 to 3%. And then we have to argue that, yeah, having a dollar today and needing a dollar tomorrow, that's a very safe thing to be in the U.S. right now. Obviously, we're not in hyperinflationary territory at the moment. However, if you have that dollar today and you need exactly $1 of purchasing power in 20 years, owning that non-volatile asset is outrageously risky. So that's a really simple way of looking at it. But if you can get people to admit that, yes, they're in that sense, there is a difference between volatility and risk, then you can start peeling away at the layers and they're exposing that they're arguing this from at least that argument is coming from a false premise. And you can start chipping away at those things.
Yeah, no, understood. The time frame's very important here. What about when it comes to that diversified portfolio? What percentage would you recommend the average portfolio would put into Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies when they've obviously got, you know, their global funds and unit trusts and mutual funds? What percent? 5%? 10%? What sort of figure would you give?
All right. So obviously you don't. All disclosures, don't take this as investment advice, talk to your personal advisor. And this is just our average. So our average client here, generally at the moment, I would say, client right now is probably exposed to about 45% of their total investable assets. That was lower a couple of years ago. So we're looking, most of this is we're going to buy and we're going to hold and pretend that it doesn't exist for a very long time. And then some of it we're getting more tactical with, especially if you own a very sizable percent of your net worth. Maybe we should look at rebalancing at some point, be it for behavioral risks or for, again, sequence of return risks. Like if you have 100% of your net worth in Bitcoin and you need some of those dollars in 1 week, we're probably going to take some of that money off the table today, obviously, and now you're at 99% or whatever. So that's where we are tactical with some of your holdings. But yeah, a few years ago, so back in, what was it, 21 or so, our average client was like 20%. And then when Bitcoin went from 69,000 to 16,000, I had a lot of conversations with a lot of clients about, hey, we're going to reduce what we're doing towards these normal buckets. You know, maybe you're maxing out your 401k plan or things like that. We're going to drop those down and we're going to put our foot on the gas to increase our DCA to Bitcoin. And obviously, if you just like throw fuel on the fire at your DCA for Bitcoin, your dollar cost average to Bitcoin starting at 16,000, you just keep doing that for the next few years, it's going to gobble up a lot more of your portfolio. And that's where we're at today. And in general, we have not started rebalancing. So yeah, it's most people who come to me, I'll put it this way. Again, don't apply this to yourself personally. You have to talk with someone about your personal financial life. But our clients right now, our lowest client is 10% of total investable assets. So that's including our retired, I mean, clients who are in their 80s. We have clients who are in their 20s up to in their late 80s. And that is the absolute lowest at the moment.
Yeah. Okay.
But I'm also really odd as a financial advisor, and we manage these things very closely and specifically. So, yeah.
Do you stick to just Bitcoin or do you look at other altcoins, some of the major cryptocurrencies outside of the king of crypto?
No, I stick to Bitcoin. I do have clients who own some altcoins in some capacity, and we talk through why that is and what their plan is with them. The reason I stick with Bitcoin only, I personally have to consider what is the foundational issue that was being set out to solve with all of the crypto world. And obviously, I believe that Satoshi properly identified the problem. And that was, we need a money that can be traded peer-to-peer over the internet that's decentralized and has a fixed unit, fixed number of units. And Bitcoin does that. There are obviously other cryptocurrencies that might have other use cases, but we have to identify, is that use case something that we're trying to optimize and solve for versus going for this main thing that I think is super important? And that's where we opt into Bitcoin. Again, I have some clients who do own altcoins in some capacity. We have very honest conversations as to why they own those. They are usually, hey, I bought this thing. It's a meme coin. And I'm going to most people I see with meme coins are like, they're basically meme coins for most people are scratch offs for Gen Z. Or if you're older, you can own them too. But really, it's the modern day scratch off. You're going to go like buy the newest goofy Pepe coin or Costco hot dog coin or whatever these things are that pop up. You know that you literally are buying this thing because it's sort of funny to own and hoping that it'll pump your bags before it goes down. And if you can admit that's why, then maybe you can own some, but just admit. Now, if you think that owning Costco hot dog coin is actually a good financial planning move beyond like total speculative, like I'm doing a scratch off, we might have some problems. But yeah, from a financial planning perspective and what we proactively recommend, it's just Bitcoin.
Yeah. Okay. And funds, you know, you get a commission when you're an advisor. Normally the model is right. If you sell a fund, you'll get a commission from the investment house, the fund manager. And is that a reason why maybe some financial advisors are not recommending Bitcoin? Because they wouldn't get commission off of Bitcoin. So they wouldn't get any money from the commission side of it. That's why they're not advising it. Or is it just they're scared of it and they don't fully understand it?
Both, depending on the person and their ethics, and the, yeah, their desire to be compensated over their desire to do what's best for clients. Some people it probably has strictly to do with how they're paid, which is really sad. Like, yeah, that's, you should do what's best for your clients no matter what. There are some people like that, and that's why I mentioned, and maybe I might be way off, and I'm sorry if I am, but I do think that's why like wirehouses and places that will manage to put this into like products they can sell. That's why I think they will probably be first to like majority to recommend it will be those types of places. And they'll go through training at their big firms to figure out a good way to sell this as a part of a full investment portfolio and be compensated for it. And then they'll roll out their whole army of, you know, financial advisor sales minions to sell it as part of a portfolio. There's them. And then, yeah, people like me who work in an RIA structure typically are like held to a deep fiduciary standard and really want to do like most of my peers. I'm part of multiple financial planning groups of super nerdy financial advisors like me who love reading and staying up to date on like tax code and stuff, you know, like, and they're great people who really want to help their clients. And for them, most of them truly do care more about their clients than their own pocketbook. So for them, it's for the majority of them, it's not, hey, I'm not paid off of this. It's they just don't understand it. And they think it's best to not talk about it. And again, we're getting to a point where ignorance is no longer a valid excuse. And that's why that goes back to the question you had earlier about the fiduciary duty side of things. You know, I think for a while that was a valid reason. It was like, hey, I just don't understand it. And, you know, I personally can't look into every single thing. Maybe there's some product out there that some guy is shouting from the rooftops is the best thing ever. And I just have no clue exists. And I can't be, you know, I can't go to jail because I did not talk about that one weird thing out there that I had no idea about. But you get to a point of like, the information is out there. It's so in your face. If you're ignoring this, now that is a breach of duty. Anyways, I think that's where most advisors are in my type of firm structure. It's less about how they're paid, more about like they just don't understand it. And at this point, it's because they're burying their head in the sand and don't want to learn about it.
Yeah. And of course, we've got this trend now with exchange traded funds, ETFs. Do you think they are, you know, a good way in for advisors, because, you know, rather than directly into Bitcoin, ETFs might be a solution to tap into this, you know, this Bitcoin sort of bull market we're seeing?
Yeah, I mean, that'll certainly make it easier from a sales perspective. You know, if you're getting compensated based off of maybe a front load or something like that, where, all right, however much you put into a portfolio, we'll pay you a 5% upfront on that. Like, all right, you probably couldn't do that through Bitcoin, but now if you have that as part of a portfolio, there you get your commission. Or if you're paid off of a strict asset under management percentage, and then yeah, that would be, most firms would be able to then allot that as an asset that's under management because it's inside of an ETF. So yeah, those sorts of things will make it easier for advisors to be an onboarding clients versus the owning Bitcoin directly in cold storage. It's like, okay, now we're facing a lot of quote unquote issues that, you know, maybe I would say aren't really issues. They're just things you need to go learn about. One of those issues is like, how am I paid on this? So yeah, there's a lot of people who are not adopting. There are some people who are not adopting because of that problem, and they will adopt the ETF because that's a solution there. But then also you have other things that people come across. I hear this is like, well, you know, what about the compliance side of things of telling clients to go and buy Bitcoin, or, you know, that's too much work to, you know, versus, you know, buying an ETF. Now I have to go send them to an exchange, and how do I vet those exchanges? And then how do I help them understand how to store it properly, you know, on an exchange versus a hot wallet versus a, you know, cold storage wallet or a multi-sig. You run into all these supposed problems with this asset they just don't understand. So just having a easy packaged ETF is a lot easier thing just to go and sell and call it a day, because it's super similar to what they've done all day for the last, you know, 40 years.
Yeah, absolutely. The Crypto Radio, we're aimed at beginners and novices and the crypto curious. And one of the things that we struggle with is the jargon and the technical terms. Do you think that's also a factor that there's a lot of the bro talk as well as, you know, L1s, L2s, and some of these things, even like altcoins, that there's just so much jargon that makes it so hard for people to even start to understand, you know, this industry?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's helpful for me to help explain this to people because I'm sort of an idiot. So I explain things in ways that I can understand. And if you keep it there, I don't do it to insult people, but because, like, I need to be explained things in a simple way, you know? So whenever I talk to our clients and I introduce, hey, I let them know up front. Again, they've worked with me for a while now before I bring this up typically. And so I've already developed a level of trust. And maybe in this particular conversation, now we're going to finally start talking about their investments. We already talked about taxes and these other areas. We're going to talk about investments today. And I let them know when we get to the investment conversation that we're going to talk about some stuff. I'm going to sound like I'm crazy, but hear me out. And then I introduce, like, you know, I and our clients, we own Bitcoin, and here's what it is. And at that point, I first allow them to – I open the conversation up. Have you heard about this thing? Do you know about it? And if so, what have you heard and what do you know? And just allow them to get off their chest. That also allows me to gauge. Do they know what this is at all? Are they talking from a place of, you know, 2017 FUD? Or is this, they have a reasonable understanding? I want to gauge where they're at from a conversation level. Also, if someone really has a deep-seated dislike for this asset, I can't ignore that thing and just talk past it, because if I just talk past it the whole time, they're not going to hear anything I'm saying. They're just going to sit here focusing on their thing they think is a trump card. So I first have to invite them, hey, what do you know about this thing? What do you understand about it? And if they're sitting there, you know, they hate it because it's going to boil the oceans and burn down the world or something, I have to allow them to get that off their chest first. So, and then, yeah, I don't talk about running a node and hash rate and all that stuff. Like, that's going to make their eyes glaze over. We need to talk about what it is. Like, why is this important? And for you to understand that, you have to talk through, like, that we talk through history of money, the history of stores of value, and then a general overview of the cryptography and the problems that, you know, these cypherpunks and computer scientists were facing starting like the 1970s and really the 90s and early 2000s that Satoshi managed to crack the nut on with business in general and double spend, these sorts of things. Like, okay, and that helps them understand why this is actually important versus thinking it's some, you know, young 20s bro who just created something in their basement so they can go buy a Lamborghini. If we can actually demonstrate from a first principles side of things. I try not to use those words. You know, then you also have the same side of things. It's like some people are like, dude, I just can't own this because I don't understand it. And there's a lot of problems with that. One, I would argue all day that Bitcoin is way easier to understand than how the US dollar or the euro or any other currency works. Like, I tried to explain to my wife a few months ago the difference of M1, M2, M3, the amount of fiat in circulation right now and how we gauge those things. It's terrible. It's a terrible process. The Fed and monetary policy and fiscal policy. It's like, you want to talk about complex? Let's go there. Bitcoin is way easier. I can literally show you what it is and how it works in an hour. Like, pretty simple. So one, I don't think that's a valid excuse. Two, maybe you're a genius. I'm not. I interact with things all the time that I have zero clue how they exist. I don't need to know exactly how it works. Like right now, I'm talking to you and you're like thousands of miles away and we're having a conversation in real time. I have no clue how we're doing this. Blows my mind. I know it works and I know it's pretty important and it's amazing. And I know that like this thing is not just it's not a scam. You know, I have some level of trust in it. And that level of trust has come from some level of education, but I don't have to fully understand how, you know, Zoom or the internet works on a technical side of things. I don't know. I don't know how most like basic plumbing in my house works. It doesn't mean I'm not going to use the plumbing in my house. That'd be crazy. So to pretend that you can't interact with Bitcoin because you don't fully understand like the depths of how it works, try to apply that to the rest of your life and see how that goes.
Yeah, good point. What would you say, Jim, is the biggest misconception about Bitcoin? Is it the scams? Is it the, you know, the those sorts of threats? Is it the environmental impact it might have? People's understanding because they can't see it. You know, what do you think is the biggest misconception that, you know, stops people, you know, being like you and being more pro Bitcoin?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. It is, in my opinion, it's the first principles concept of what is Bitcoin. And if you can address that, everything else can start falling into place. So that is, Bitcoin is money. And most people, at least in the US, I would venture to say elsewhere, have a very short-sighted view of what money is. We're informed based off of, you know, maybe our lifetime or a little bit further back when fiat currencies were, you know, the form of money, are the form of money. And we have commingled money and currency. And we think that, you know, money is the US dollar and that's it. Money has to be issued by a government and it has to be in a paper form. And we have to have inflation for things to work because we've been so force-fed Keynesian economics and these sorts of things. So if you can help them understand what is money from a historical actual point of view and that Bitcoin is that, it's better money, then things start falling into place. Then you can start addressing why the energy usage is actually super important. It is there to secure our money problem. And having sound money is outrageously important. Most people don't understand why sound money is important. They don't know what money is actually meant to do. So you have to start with that. And then everything else, yeah, there are other peripheral quote-unquote issues that will come up, but you can address those well once you've identified the root problem that Bitcoin addresses. You know, if you don't understand that Bitcoin is important from a like civilization, money, all the waste that goes into fiat currencies, if you don't understand that and you go straight to like, oh, but Bitcoin consumes a lot of energy, it will seem like wasted energy. But if you recognize that it consumes a lot of energy because of all of these things, and here's the energy that it saves in lieu of having our current, you know, status quo, okay, now it's starting to make sense.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I wonder when we'll see the next phase when it stops being an asset and tradable, speculative, and actually is being used as a form of money, as a form of payment. You know, of course, there is some adoption. There are some companies doing it, but sort of in dribs and drabs, when it may be more widespread, you know, adopted as a form of payment, whether we will ever get to that now or whether it's, you know, that's just not going to happen.
I do think that I don't know if this will be in 10 years or in 100 years. You know, even was it Warren Buffett or is it Charlie who admitted a few years ago that even they think that the U.S. dollar will not be the global reserve currency by the end of this century. They did not give a statement as to what they thought it was. They certainly did not think it was Bitcoin. But I think they even recognize that, yeah, the U.S. dollar is collapsing, is probably no longer going to be the reserve currency by the end of this century. So, if you actually pay in Bitcoin, I think that will play out. I mean, I think that Bitcoin is money, and I think it's going to gobble up every other form of money. You know, value ultimately gravitates to the scarcest and hardest form of money out there, and I think that's Bitcoin. So it will gravitate to that naturally, just a black hole that's consuming everything else. Now, we can get to the technical side of things. Maybe the U.S. and every other currency adopts a Bitcoin standard. The U.S. is now the U.S. dollar. We went from a gold standard to fiat, and now we go back to a Bitcoin standard. And maybe $1 bill equals 100 sats or satoshis. You know, for the newbies out there, you don't have to buy one Bitcoin. You can. There's the smallest level account right now is called a satoshi, and a satoshi is 1/100 millionth of a Bitcoin. So yeah, maybe one day $1 is 100 satoshis. And you go to the store and you pay in dollars, but that dollar is, you know, backed by 100 satoshis. And it's like, you know, the gold or the U.S. dollars nearly a century ago now, you could turn in. It says this is redeemable for gold. And you had this security, like guarantee on our money. And that disappeared when we left the gold standard. So maybe one day it's, hey, this dollar is redeemable for 100 satoshis. Then at that point, it's like, oh, well, Jim, it never actually came out where you're spending actual Bitcoin. It's like, yeah, but we're still there, basically. Or maybe the dollar goes away and we literally are. You go to the store and you're paying for something in satoshis, in Bitcoin.
Yeah, there's still much to play out, definitely there. I just look forward to the day when I can buy pizza. I can buy more pizza with my Bitcoin. It'd be much easier. Everybody would accept my Bitcoin for a good old pizza.
Yeah, for sure. That'd be a full circle from the first transaction.
Two pizzas for 10,000 Bitcoin.
Absolutely wild.
Yeah, crazy. Jim, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and I love your honesty. You know, as you said, keep it simple, treat me like an idiot, and that's the best way to learn.
Yeah, no, it was great. I appreciate the conversation.
Brilliant. Jim Kreider, CEO of Intentional Living FP and certified financial planner based in the US. Thank you for talking to the Crypto Radio.
Yes, sir. Thank you.